actual problem.
Thank you. Thank you very much for the invitation. Can you see it clearly from long angles? Shall we turn off the lights? Oh, thank you. So this is work based. The new part of my talk is based on the work I've done with Shamit Kachur and two of his students at Stanford. This is the first one here, and also a larger view that with Bobby Acharya that appears in print and physics reports, and probably will put it out soon on the net. So the talk, as title suggests, will be about flux compactifications and moduli problem. But thinking about, and that's the work we did with Shamit and his students, but thinking about preparing for this talk, I realized that many of the ingredients that are involved in our construction are very standard in constructing in most of the models for really most of the models of particle physics that appear in string theory, that we use in string theory. And therefore, I thought that it might be more fun if I introduce all these ingredients in a lightning review of superstring phenomenology, of the history of superstring phenomenology, and then come to detailed construction in our paper once these ingredients are introduced. So this is the outline of my talk. As I said, I'll start with a brief review of the history. Then we'll focus on recent developments and the current problems in constructing realistic models out of string theory. And in particular, towards the end of my talk, I'll focus more closely on the moduli problem. We'll tell you about flux compactifications that provide one of the ways to solve this problem, and more closely focus on the work with Shamit and his students. So as disclaimers on the board suggest, I'll try to give a broad review of superstring phenomenology, although in order to stay within the time limits, I have to focus on certain class of questions, and those will be related to particle physics. And for most of the time, I'll have to ignore questions. Unfortunately, I'll have to skip the questions related to cosmology, but it doesn't mean that they're less interesting or less important. I'll mention obviously some throughout the talk, but we'll have less to say about it. And also another disclaimer is that I'll be studying just one vacuum at a time, assuming that we are not yet to resort to anthropic principle or anything like that. So I won't do statistics of string vacuum. My goal will be to construct at least one which resembles particle physics as we know it as close as possible. So with this disclaimer, I now go into brief review of the history. So I decided to split history in several periods, which basically indicate the course of development of superstring phenomenology. And the first period I call the Stone Age. And although it doesn't really refer to string theory per se, and it's about unification of forces, I think it's definitely the first stage I should mention. So it starts with the standard model and the fact that there are several indications already within the standard model of particle physics that there should be some structure beyond it. And these indications, the most famous ones, include unification of gauge interactions that I'll mention and have some graphs on a later transparency. Another indication is the very fact that atoms are stable. That is that electron and proton have the same value of electric charge up to a sign. And finally, on this list, we see that there are many parameters in standard model, about 20 of them if you don't count neutrino masses and charge assignments. So this suggests that it's probably not a very fundamental structure, and there should be something else beyond it. And one way to account for all of these curious facts is the idea of ground unification of gauge interactions. So the idea is very simple. It just says that the standard model group, SU3 cross SU2 cross U1, combines in a bigger group, which I call G-Gaunt. In this case, there is an example where it's SU5, one of the famous examples originally due to Georgia and Glashow, where SU3 and SU2 sit in this diagonal blocks of SU5. And with this assignment, one generation of fermions can nicely be represented as collection of two simple representations of SU5, namely 10 and 5 bar. Well, there are several problems. This is a nice idea, and it settles to the first approximation all of these curious facts I mentioned on the previous transparency, but it brings some further problems. One is that proton decays very rapidly, in particular in this model I mentioned. The second one is that the electroweak angle, sine theta W squared, is not quite close to the value it should have. And the final problem is that this unification occurs, if you extrapolate gauge interactions, it occurs at a very high energy scale. And then there is no good reason to expect that Higgs and other particles and other physics associated to electroweak physics should have a scale much, much smaller than that. And this is the Higgs or hierarchy problem. So in particular, even if in the original Lagrangian we assign Higgs to electroweak Higgs to be of small mass, due to loop corrections like the ones shown on the board, shown on the transparency, we'll see that the Higgs max gets corrections proportional to God scale squared, and this definitely ruins the original hierarchy. So the main question, in fact, is not how to get the hierarchy, but how to keep it stable. And with this, we come to a natural solution once we incorporate supersymmetry into the picture. So the next stage in development of realistic particle models in a unified fashion involves implementing supersymmetry into this game. It does solve the hierarchy problem because the loop diagrams, like the ones I've shown on the previous transparency, cancel. And therefore, if for some reason we have the Higgs very light compared to the God scale, then its mass will stay there. Another attractive feature of supersymmetric models, in particular MSSM, minimal extension of the standard model which involves supersymmetry called MSSM, is that our gauge couplings unify much better. So as you can see in the standard model, they miss a little bit around the God scale, which is 10 to the 16 GeV. But in the MSSM, they meet quite nicely, which is another good feature. And in NMSSM, we have R parity symmetry, which means that lightest supersymmetric particle is stable and could be a good candidate for dark matter. Well, although I promised not to talk about cosmology, I just couldn't resist to mention this one. So we see that the idea of ground unification plus supersymmetry naturally solves a lot of conceptual problems that I were explains quite a few curiosities that I put forward in the beginning. And therefore, it's natural to request now for further unification with gravity. And with all of these ingredients, unification, supersymmetry, and gravity, we come to string theory. So this I call the Bronze Age of superstring phonology. That's really where string theory came on stage. So the first models of particle physics, of realistic particle physics within string theory, were based on heterotic string, and that's the context that I'll carry throughout the talk today. Once we go to string theory, we have another interesting prediction, namely extra dimensions. And since string theory requires us to have at least 10 space-time dimensions, we have to make sure that we don't see 6 or 7 of the dimensions that are not common to our eye. And the simple way to do this is to compactify string theory space-time, namely take a product of Minkowski space or our four-dimensional space and a compact manifold X, the name that will remain throughout the talk. And if you do so, then physics in four dimensions on this space M4 is encoded into geometry of a compact manifold X. Therefore, the question in superstring phonology is really to find the right geometric structures on the manifold X which encode realistic particle physics. And as you'll see later in my talk, each aspect of particle physics has its manifestation in the geometry of space X. So as long as we can find the right manifold with the right geometry, we are pretty much done. So what are the requirements that we should reproduce from such a string model of particle physics? Here are at least some questions, some aspects which we need to reproduce in a compactification on such space X in order to fit the realistic physics, the real world. And one obvious, on the top of my list, I have got symmetry breaking, namely, we have to reproduce the picture that I showed you in the very beginning, namely, if we have SU5 or some other grand unified theory, we need to break it to the standard model gauge group in order to realize this idea of unification. Secondly, we obviously should have realistic matter content, like 3 generations, and the right Higgs content. Next, we have to ensure that proton doesn't decay very fast. And one of the problems here is that in order to do this, we have to suppress decay via colored partner of a Higgs doublet, Higgsino, colored Higgsino. And this, in practice, what it means that we have to make this partner very heavy, of the order of God scale, whereas the Higgs doublet should be very light. And even once we do so, there are other channels for proton to decay due to dimension 5 and 6 operators, so we have to make sure that those don't contradict the experiment as well. Well, there are more requirements, and they include the moduli problem that I'll discuss towards the end of my talk in more details. And that's the problem that string theory typically predicts a lot of light fields, a lot of massless fields, and compactification on space X, unless we do something special. So we have to make sure that these fields are massive or not there for some reason. So we have to get rid of those. In such a compactification, one should have a natural mechanism to obtain very small value for theta QCD. This is the so-called strong CP problem. Plus ensure that CP is not broken too much and you cover couplings and other interactions. Then there are many questions related to flavor physics, like there is a natural question why why flavor changing processes are suppressed. how supersymmetry is broken. So we have also to make sure that we reproduce right fermion masses, neutrino masses, cosmological constant, and then many, many other questions. So as you can see on this transparency, I put all these questions, all these requirements, not necessarily according to their importance, but according to which ones we are close of addressing in realistic string models. So the ones towards the top are the ones which we can control reasonably easily, and the ones towards the bottom are the ones we have less to say about. So, and this error indicates basically where we are at the present time. So let me now, as I mentioned, in string models, for example, in heterotic string models, all of these properties that we see in realistic particle physics have to be encoded in certain aspects of geometry of the space X. And let me start on the top of this list and try to go down, trying to recover each of these aspects of particle physics via certain geometric aspect of the space X. Try to establish this dictionary. The first item on that list was got symmetry breaking, that is starting with a unified gauge group. I would have to obtain standard model gauge group, and this goes as follows. So let's look more closely what happens. Once we are in heterotic string theory, we have E8 cross EH gauge symmetry in 10 dimensions. So when I say compactification, what I really mean is that manifold X comes with E8 cross EH vector bundle. There is a condition, though, which comes from anomalies in string theory, which says that second turn class of that vector bundle has to be the same as second turn class of compactification manifold. And the usual way to satisfy this constraint is to say that one of the gauge fields in one of the E8s includes a spin connection, this omega X, and then therefore breaks E8 to a subgroup, which in this example is E6. So in order to satisfy this consistency condition in string theory, we already have to break E8 cross E8 down to some subgroup across another E8, and in this example, this subgroup is E6, which is very favorable God gauge group. However, we have to break it further, and the way we do it is via Wilson lines. So we turn some flat gauge fields on manifold X upon this compactification such that holonomy, this path ordered integral over non-trivial cycles of the gauge field, breaks group like E6 or SU5 down to subgroup. And in order to have that, obviously, we should have non-trivial loops, non-trivial cycles in the manifold X. So put differently, the manifold should not be simply connected. Well, is it hard or is it easy to arrange that within string models? Well, it turns out that it's not very hard. So I give one example here. So this is an example where fundamental group, so assuming that fundamental group of a manifold is some cyclic group like ZP here, we can have diagonal holonomy of the following form. And if you choose these phases appropriately, we can very easily break the God gauge group like S6 or SU5 down to a subgroup. And this is an example where we can realize such a fundamental group being a cyclic group of order 5. So this is one of the favorite Calabi-Yau manifolds that physicists use, namely the quintic, which is a Calabi-Yau given by this hypersurface equation in CP4, I list here the Betti numbers of this manifold. It has very large Euler characteristic, which is 200. But interesting thing is that for suitably chosen deformations of these hypersurfaces, it can be invariant under discrete symmetry, which simply multiplies all of these variables, all of these complex variables, Z1 through Z5, by complex phases, which are fifth root of unity. And if you consider, therefore, quotient of the original hypersurface by such a discrete group, we naturally end up with a manifold, as long as action of this gamma is free, we end up with a manifold whose first fundamental group is Z5. Essentially this group gamma. So that's a way to naturally construct a Calabi-Yau manifold, which does lead to a possibility of turning Wilson lines that we could use to break God gauge group down to a realistic MSSM like subgroup. So the next item on my list was the matter content of the theory. In particular, we would have to make sure that we have three generations in our model. And it turns out, by analysis which involves syntax theorems and other tools, that number of generations in such compactifications is related to Euler characteristic of the manifold X. So this is the second item on my dictionary where I say that number of generations is related to certain geometric aspect of the manifold X. But as we saw before, typical Calabi-Yaus have very large Euler characteristic of the order of several hundreds, like 200 for the quintic threefold that we had in the previous transparency. And therefore, we need some way to obtain more realistic models where manifold has smaller order characteristic. Well, it turns out that the same solution is available here, namely, if we have some symmetry group gamma, which is freely acting on the original space, we can quotient the space by the symmetry and obtain a space which has smaller Euler characteristic. Basically, it's the same as for original space divided by the order of the group. So in this example, again, I take the case of quintic hypersurface given by this very symmetric equation. But now I enlarge my group gamma a little bit. Not only I involve multiplication by fifth roots of unity, this is the first generator here, but also I notice that this equation is invariant under rotation cyclic permutation of Z1, Z2 through Z5. And this group generated by these two elements has order 25. So the quotient of the original quintic by this group would have Euler characteristic 200 by 25. And if I plug it into the formula on top of the transparency, I learn that this simple model has four generations, which is reasonably close to what we need. So this method allows us to produce models with realistic matter content. So what I explained so far is that both of these first two items, first two requirements on my list, namely suitable God symmetry breaking and obtaining realistic matter content, can be easily achieved in case one manifold is of the form X mod gamma, where gamma is freely acting group, namely that manifold is not simply connected. That's the geometric property that we need in order to address these two problems. So what I'm going to show next is that the remaining several items also can be easily addressed once manifold X has the same structure, namely color doublet-triplet splitting and proton decay, as well as the moduli problem in the same context of heterotic theory. So This brings me to modern age of superstring terminology, which I call the RN age. And I think it's fair to say that that happened around 95 with the second superstring revolution, when we realized that there are other ways, except for hadrotic string, to reproduce realistic physics with minimal supersymmetry. And these involve some non-perturbative string vacua like F-theory, which is a 12-dimensional theory, or M-theory, which lives in 11 dimensions. And in these cases, they become natural partners of heterotic compactification on Calabi-Yau threefolds, where many folds should be of dimension 7 and 8 respectively, and they have to be either G2 holonomy manifolds or Calabi-Yau fourfolds. So we learn that there are more possibilities here. However, we also learn with the second superstring revolution that there are new relations between this vacuum, and although we get some new possibilities, there are new connections between them which unify some of them. So, for example, an example which will be relevant for me later is where is where Calabi-Yau threefold used in heterotic compactification admits a torus vibration, and Strominger, Yao, and Zaslav showed that most of Calabi-Yaus do in a certain region in the moduli space. And in our work with Yao and Zaslav, we showed that G2 manifolds have a similar structure, but fibered by K3 manifold over some three-dimensional cycle Q, over some three-dimensional base Q. And these two structures are dual to each other by a simple duality of heterotic string on 3 torus and M3 on K3. There is a fiber-wise duality which relates to compactifications of that kind. So in most cases, we can consider either of these two pictures, whichever is easier. So this fibration structure will be useful for me in the following. So let me proceed and come to the next problem on my list, which was the doublet-triplet splitting problem. So the problem is basically to address a large hierarchy between the mass of Higgs doublets, H up and H down, and the triplet partners, if I'm talking about SU5 unified model. So as you can see, the hierarchy is huge. It's roughly the ratio of electroweak scale and gut scale, and there is no reason, at least not in MSSM or this SU5 model per se, to have such a huge disparity. So I'll review here one of the solutions to this problem, which can be realized in string context and was recently exploited by Witten in the context of G2 compactification. And the construction is based on the following simple fact. So suppose we have a discrete symmetry F such that it acts on triplets and doublets in the following way. So here, HT and HUP form one representation, for example, 5 of SU5, and HT conjugate and H down form are members of the dual representation. So assuming that there is a symmetry F which acts on this Higgs doublets and triplets, multiplying them by phases, alpha, beta, gamma, and delta, and such that alpha plus gamma combine in a phase which is multiple of 2 pi, but the symmetry acting on doublets, namely phases beta and delta, don't combine to a multiple of 2 pi, we get the following. We learn that this symmetry would definitely allow a mass term for triplets, but would require, would roll out any mass term mu for doublets. And therefore, as long as we find such a symmetry which has these two properties within string theory context, we can definitely address the doublet triplet splitting and, among other things, protect proton from too rapid decay. So I won't go into detail of string realization, but I'll just mention one thing, that for this construction to be embedded in string theory, one needs a three cycle of the form S3 mod gamma, where S3 is a three sphere and gamma is a discrete group sitting inside compactification manifold X. So this gamma then is related to the discrete symmetry I had on the previous transparency. So let me show you that in my previous example of a quintic threefold, there is a such a cycle. And this is precisely the base of the torus vibration that I mentioned earlier as well. So in order to describe the cycle in the quintic threefold, I consider the absolute value of the coordinates zi, which appear in this equation. And in mathematical language, it means that I look at the projection of this quintic threefold to the base of the toric geometry. And under this map, where zi goes to log of absolute value zi, the equation projects into a real three-dimensional set, which is homeomorphic to three sphere. So this is a two-dimensional slice of this three-dimensional set. And as you can see, it has one hole in there. And if I could draw a three-dimensional set, it would be really diffeomorphic to a three sphere. Now, if you recall, but so far we did just projection of the original quintic hypersurface. Now we have to recall that we also have action of a group gamma. Well, one of the generators of gamma was acting by multiplying z's by phases. So obviously under this map, it doesn't act on the three sphere, which is the base of this vibration. But the other generator, which was permuting zi's, which was a cyclic permutation of the ice, still acts on this three-dimensional set, on the three-sphere. And therefore, this is a particular example where gamma, which was z5 cross z5, produces for us a three-cycle, which has topology as 3 mod z5. And that's precisely what Witten needs to solve the doublet-triplet splitting in the context of string compactifications. So now I come to next problem, which will be the last one for this talk, and I'll stay here and tell you some more details. And this is the moduli problem. So as I mentioned earlier, in many of these string compactifications, we have very light fields, massless fields, the moduli, which obviously contradict experimental observations, and we have to get rid of these fields or make them very massive. And one of the general ways to do this is to include fluxes in compactification, that is, some tensor form background fields like electric and magnetic fields on the manifold X. And here I basically summarize what it does for you. First of all, it gives us a new tool to break supersymmetry down to minimal supersymmetry, which is also phenomenologically favorable. But it also allows to stabilize the moduli via producing a superpotential, which can be written in a very simple form. Namely, it can be written as flux wedge sum invariant form on the manifold X. In the case of Calabi-Yau, it can be holomorphic 3-form omega, but similar idea applies to G2 manifolds and other compactifications as well. So in this example, I show how it would work in type 2B string theory, which when compactified on Calabi-Yau threefold produces n equals 2 supersymmetric model, but once we include fluxes, it breaks supersymmetry further to n equals 1, which is realistically more viable. And the resulting superpotential due to flux has the same form as given by the above formula, where G3 is Ramon-Ramon as a combination of Ramon-Ramon and NS-NS tensor fluxes, tensor forms in type 2B theory. And this superpotential breaks supersymmetry down to n equals 1 and stabilizes most of the moduli, in particular all complex structure moduli. However, there are some problems with such scenarios. So although fluxes could be used to stabilize many of the moduli, there are several ones which are particularly hard to deal with, and that will be the main subject for the rest of my talk. Such moduli, which are very hard to stabilize, are radii of Calabi-Yau's or G2 manifolds, that is overall sizes, or dilaton. So fluxes themselves, fluxes alone, don't stabilize these two moduli, and we have to invent some new techniques. So this is where I come to one of the scenarios which we used in work with Shamit and his students. And the idea is to use not only fluxes, but also Gaugino condensation. So I remind you that in hadronic string theory, we have two gauge sectors, two E8s. In one of the E8 sectors, we realize our standard model or grand unified physics. In the other sector, we achieve, we want to have Gaugino condensation. And assuming, for example, that the matter content allows that, the gauge group in the hidden sector confines and undergoes Gaugino condensation, which leads to the following contribution in the superpotential. Apart from flux term, which for my purposes is just a constant, it doesn't depend on the dilaton in hadronic string theory, we also have another term of the following kind, which is exponential in the dilaton field S. This field S has interpretation of Young-Mills coupling plus axion from the four-dimensional viewpoint. And CH here is the dual Coxeter number of the gauge group in the hidden sector that undergoes Gaugino condensation. So that was the idea of Dine, Rom, Seiberg, and Witten in 85 to use Gaugino condensation and perhaps flux effects to produce superpotential that, among other things, could stabilize moduli. At least that's the way how we should probably interpret it nowadays. But the problem is that if we minimize the superpotential, if we look for critical points, what happens is that we get the equation where flux is related to this function of the dilaton field S. And in order to stay in a weakly coupled theory, S has to be reasonably large, meaning that this exponential term is very small. But this is not possible because flux is quantized. And therefore, if we take even the minimal value of the flux quanta, we end up with strongly coupled theory, which is not very good for many reasons. First, it's not under control. And secondly, it would contradict realistic physics. So we modify this picture a little bit by looking carefully at what three-form flux is in the context of hadronic theory. We notice that it's not just a tensor field given by dB, as we usually think as derivative of a two-form, but it also involves Trin-Simon's contributions from spin connection and from gauge connection in the gauge bundle. And it's this last term of this Trin-Simon's of A that I'm going to use to cope with this problem. In particular, Well, it's based on a simple observation that given this form, the integral, the flux, doesn't have to be integer anymore, because Chern-Simons functional of a gauge connection can take any rational values, depending, well, provided that we have a suitable geometry. And using that fact, we can get very small fractions of an integer and use this idea to use the old idea of Dynram, Seiberg, and Witten to combine fluxes and Gaugenian condensation to stabilize moduli, where now fluxes are very, very small fractions given by this Chern-Simons functional. So here, on top of this transparency, right here, there is an example. If in my compactification manifold X, there is a three-cycle Q such that it's three-sphere mod some cyclic group, like the one we had a couple of transparencies earlier, then we can arrange gauge fields to have Wilson lines, which are very typical. And this could be, for example, the same Wilson lines that we use to break grand unified group down to standard model group. Then such gauge fields, although they're flat, they contribute to this Chern-Simons functional, and that contribution has the denominator of the order of P, of the order of the cyclic group of the, which appears in the three cycle here. So in the previous example, P was 5, so denominator was about 10. And here below, I give an example, assuming that H is of order 1/10. As you can see, if Gaugenian condensation happens in E7 group, then the critical point of the superpotential allows us to have a solution where H is 1/10. That's exactly as in the previous example of a very simple example of a quintic. And alpha gut is very close to the value it should have. It's 1/20. Well, due to this exponential dependence, the formula, this dependence is very steep. And if I want to improve alpha gut to a more realistic value of 1/25, then I have to take H, the flux, of order 1/40. So you see it decreases quite rapidly. But nonetheless, it's very not so hard to arrange in the context of Calabi-Yau compactifications we typically use to address other problems.
This is weakly coupled heteroid string, right?
Right. Everything is weakly coupled
this
here.
This is even in 1985. People would try just a little bit harder. Does it depend on anything we've learned since? Is that
well, the only new ingredient here, which was missed for some reason, is a contribution of this Chern-Simons term, which allows us to have small fractions. Other than that, everything goes through. So the only problem at that time was that we get to strong coupling, and here there's a realization in a weakly coupled theory, which is almost automatic because this Wilson lines are already there. We already use them to break God gauge group. And the point I'm trying to emphasize here is that non-simply connectedness of compactification manifold solves all these problems in one package. It breaks God gauge group, it produces realistic matter content, doublet triplet splitting, and plus moduli in a very nice way as a single package. So I use this Wilson lines and non-simply connectedness to stabilize the dilaton. However, one can try now to stabilize the volume as well by including threshold corrections, one-loop corrections to the gauge functions, gauge coupling functions in the two gauge groups. And they have the form S plus minus beta T, where S and T are the fields, S is dilaton field as before, and T is the volume, is a chiral field which includes the dependence on the volume, and beta is some topological number given by this integral of Chern classes. So given this, we reproduce, assuming that model is weakly coupled and we stay in the large volume limit, the effective physics is governed by the following curvilinear potential and superpotential, where superpotential now includes this dependence on the field T, and one would expect that generically, because there is dependence on both S and T, we can stabilize both dilaton modulus and volume modulus. So in fact, this is a plot of some region of the scalar potential, which comes out from the scalar potential and superpotential. So it looks like it's some pretty crazy function, gotta have a minimum somewhere. So in fact, it does have a minimum, which in this context obviously leads to ADS, anti de Sitter vacuum, and the equations I have to solve is simply variation of the superpotential, covariant variation of the superpotential with respect to S and T. This equation's on top here. And if I do so, I obtain two equations for S and T, which have a solution, no problem here. But after I substitute the values at the minimum of S and T back into values for gauge coupling, I find something interesting. I find that the visible sector gauge coupling undergoes a strong coupling transition. That is, the naive expression for 1 over G Young Mill square in the visible sector is negative. Well, that's clearly indication that something subtle is going on, and we have to include strong coupling effects. Well, fortunately, in string models, this is not one of the this is one of the simplest singularities, and in target space geometry, it's simply given by a flop transition. It's basically a transition in geometry where one two-cycle collapses and the other two-cycle grows, and in the end of it, once we include all corrections, all non-perturbative corrections, the transition is very smooth. There is no real singularity there, so the effect is only that we have to analytically continue the expression to the other side, and typically up to some monodromy, and this monodromy flips the sign. So all I have to do is I have to continue 1 over G Young Mill square to the other side and make it positive. But the actual coefficient and details here start depending on the model, and that's where the generic setup in which I was presenting this breaks down, and one has to look at each particular model in detail. Yes?
This picture is not in the Calabi-Yau geometry, but they're actually in some empty picture.
This is actually a fourfold, Calabi-Yau fourfold in F3 picture, which is the exact picture representing this phenomenon. That's right. But my point here is that it's not really complicated. This kind of transition happens already in six-dimensional compactifications of heterodic theory, and it's reasonably well understood. So this part, although it involves some non-perturbative physics and definitely requires careful attention, is not the hardest problems on the market.
So you could have started by analyzing it on the other side.
Yes, the proper way would be to start by analyzing it on the other side. But now, we didn't do it, we did it in one simple toy model, trying to show that things work well. But we didn't try to construct a specific example, though it should be possible. And the proper way to do this probably would be in the context of F3 on a fourfold, where everything here is very geometric and there is no mystery whatsoever. And the only question is just to start on the right side. Start on the side where which doesn't force us to go through such a transition. So I leave it as it is. I leave it as a potential possibility to stabilize both volume and dilaton, but I have to say that I don't have a specific model to present here.
Do you fully understand the relevant effects on the other side that stabilize?
The crucial thing here is that potential here is generated by a hidden sector Gugino condensation. And what becomes strongly coupled is the visible sector. So it's a situation where we have a potential, and that's completely under control. That's hidden sector physics. And it's only visible sector which becomes strongly coupled and pushed to the other side, but it doesn't change superpotential at all. There is no Gugino condensation. So it's It's a very clean situation. It's a very clean setup. The only thing we have to really understand the proper coefficients on this analytic continuation to the other side, the monodromy, and that's a very nice geometric problem once realized in a fourfold. So, but as I said, we haven't done it. Although I think it should be very tractable. So let me conclude now. As I say, at this point, the problem depends on details of each particular realization, and in many of the cases, we have more moduli, not just volume and dilaton. And now, this problem actually gets coupled to stabilizing other moduli, which can be achieved by fluxes. But all I'm trying to stress, it's not independent now from the other aspects. So instead of going into details, let me just conclude with a summary of various different methods that can be used to stabilize moduli in such compactifications. So this is a very sketchy review of the possibilities of various methods that there are on the market and the difficulties. So as I said, one simple way to stabilize moduli would use fluxes, but and it does the job pretty well, but it doesn't stabilize the volume and the dilaton. So that's the main problem. So, and the rest is just about stabilizing these two remaining guys. So one could include non-perturbative corrections. And if one does so in a very generic form like KKLT, one typically loses control. Or it's hard to construct concrete model. Although this is the direction which certainly hasn't been studied to the proper extent, and I can very easily believe that there might be a solution there, although it's a bit surprising that every time we try to find one, we face one of the problems like here, this strong coupling transition. So there might be some conspiracy and some deep reason why it doesn't want to happen. So another approach to this problem is to use non-Keller manifolds, which are T-dual to flux compactifications. But here, the problem, once we understand them, they definitely should solve the problem of stabilizing volume modulus and the dilaton simply because of the T-duality. But here the problem is that we don't have any geometric understanding of such manifolds. In particular, we don't have examples, and we don't even know how to count moduli. So we know that we are stabilizing something, but we don't know how many of the moduli are there and if you're stabilizing all of them. So it's a very funny situation where we feel that we are on the right track, but we have no idea how many moduli we have to stabilize. Well, another example would be asymmetric orbifold. There are examples which have very few or almost no moduli, but by construction, which uses some involution on the wall sheet of lattices of the usual tori and compactifications like that, by construction, we come to examples which are very stringy, that is, manifolds of the string scale. And although we don't have moduli, we definitely expect further corrections, although, again, it probably should be tractable because at least as far as we see it near orbifold points. Well, Bobby Acharya last year suggested another way to stabilize moduli in the context of M3 on G2 manifolds, which involves a similar method to what we used with Shamit. Namely, it involves complex Chern-Simons theory based on a complex gauge group. But in order to realize this in practice, one has to find a hyperbolic three cycle, that is a three cycle with a negative curvature inside compactification manifold. And there is a good reason that such cycles don't exist, at least generically. And finally, the approach I presented here, which is based on a combination of this Chern-Simons flux and heterodic theory plus Gugino condensation, it does seem to stabilize the dilaton quite well, but as we try to stabilize the volume, it leads us to strong coupling transition, which is nothing but flop transition or G2 flop transition in the dual pictures. So I'll stop here with this remark. Right.
So the fluxes, certain fluxes would help with the volume stabilization. Right?
That's right. But what typically happens is that depending, there are many frames to do this, either type 2B, type 2A, or M-theory frame. And what typically happens is that there is always one modulus, like a dilaton or volume, depending on where we are. For example, in type 2B, we have only middle dimensional fluxes on a threefold. And those don't do anything to the volume. They leave it, I mean, it still remains just a flat direction. In type 2A, you're right, we could turn fluxes of different rank, of different dimensionality, and those would try to make, to produce opposite effect on the volume, I mean, opposite potential, different potential, which would have a minimum somewhere, but then we would have a problem with the dilaton. So the story is that no matter in which frame we translate the problem, we'll end up with one field which is typically the overall size or the dilaton. And that's the one which is hard to nail down.
Any other questions? Okay, let's thank you again.